couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, Raya and the Last Dragon, Coming to America, that's a number two, Chaos Walking, Boogie, and Lucky. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Rick and Morty seasons 1-4. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The piece of news I wanted to highlight is one that's been causing a whole bunch of stir all in the universe of the internet. And the first thing is about the Muppets. Look, Disney did not cancel the Muppets. Well, they canceled the Muppets TV show they had a couple years ago. If you want more of the Muppets, maybe you should be watching that. Or you should have gone and seen Muppets Most Wanted, more people than actually did. But the thing with the Muppet Show is they put the five seasons of the Muppet Show back from the 70s. It ran from like 1976 to 1980 or 81. And they put all five seasons on air. And the reason that's important is because it's the first time the seasons 4 or 5 have been made available. They had released the first three seasons on DVD quite a few years ago, actually. And this is the first time you've actually had access to the last two seasons. Now, people got upset because there are two episodes that are not on there out of the 120 that they made. And then there are certain musical numbers that are deleted from the lineup. And the other thing about it is they come up with a disclaimer in front of some of the episodes. It's like a 10-second disclaimer. And then the show airs and it basically says, look, this might have some images that might be offensive to some, and instead of deleting it, we're just letting you know that it wasn't right then, it's not right now, blah, blah, blah. A very typical disclaimer we've seen. In one of the episodes, like, Johnny Cash is singing a song in front of a Confederate flag. Now, look, I know there's a lot of people in the South that are like, oh, you know, they still have pride in the Confederate flag. You cannot deny the fact that there are a lot of people who see that as not a symbol of Southern pride. And there's a lot of, you know, you can disagree on that, but there's a lot of people who see that as a sign of the want of the Confederacy, which includes slavery. But those aren't deleted from the episodes. The stuff that actually got deleted from the Muppets episodes were because of rights issues. They didn't have the rights to certain songs, and that's because they made it for broadcast back in the 70s, and that's the way broadcast works. They secured the rights for that, but they didn't secure the rights for VHS, and then when they got the rights for VHS, they hadn't secured them for digital media, and then when they got the digital media DVDs, they didn't secure them for streaming. So there's always going to be this rights issue of songs, and we've seen that with everything from the releases of the WKRP in Cincinnati seasons that had a lot of the music stripped from them, all the way to something like Love at First Bite, the George Hamilton Dracula movie that came out in the 80s, that had a lot of the music stripped out of it because they did not own the rights to that to put on DVD because it was made for movies and broadcast television was negotiated in there as well, but not digital delivery. And then there's one with Brooke Shields doing a Dorothy sketch from Wizard of Oz. And Disney has had a fraught relationship with the Wizard of Oz that is very entangled and difficult. And I think they said this is just going to be too expensive to get all these rights to the images from the Wizard of Oz that they're parodying, that they're just going to say, we're just not going to put that on there because we don't want to deal with that. And then there's another one who one of the guest stars who replaced Richard Pryor at the last minute. Turns out this guy was, well, let's just say, delicately put, he was arrested in like 2007 for charges about, let's just say, criminal pornography is the best way to put it. And I think that the Disney's like, we're not going to put that on there and let kids start asking their parents about this person. So that's what went on with the Muppets. The Muppets weren't canceled. In fact, if anything, the Muppets are more available now than they ever were. And if you want to get mad at anybody, don't get mad at woke culture. Get mad at the rights owners to some of this music for making it so difficult to attain. Now, when it comes to Dr. Seuss, there were 6 books out of the dozens that he wrote. 6 of them. Most of them are obscure anyway. But I'm sure that the Seuss estate has gotten a lot of complaints over the years that have targeted these books. There's a reason why they picked up on them. And what's funny is if you go to look for the images, it's really hard to actually find the actual images from the books. You hear people talk about them. There's a billion news stories, but it takes a long time to find the images. And yes, these are offensive images. And I've always found that if you want to find out if something's offensive, you ask the people that would be offended by it. Like there's some imagery of Chinese people in these Dr. Seuss images. Take a random sampling of Chinese people. I'm not talking about something that's politically motivated. I'm talking about take a random sampling of Chinese people, show them what's in there and say, is this culturally insensitive? And if they say yes, then it probably is. Me as a white guy am not in any position to lecture Chinese people as to what is offensive to them. You know, I do not want to hear a skinny person lecture me on what I should find offensive or not offensive about a fat joke. And I have a friend of a friend who's one of those, oh, I'm an equal opportunity offender. I'll say anything. I'll joke about anything except for retardation because my son's mentally retarded. And he gets really offended at that stuff. And that's what I generally found in the world. You can always find somebody in your life who's like, I'm not offended about anything. But then you find something that they are. Whether it's cancer because their mother just died of cancer. Or whether it's their personal racial structure. They've usually run into it personally, and then you got to walk on eggshells around them. So the reason this Dr. Seuss stuff doesn't bother me, Cat in the Hat's fine. Grinch Who Stole Christmas is fine. Horton Hears a Who. Bartholomew Cubbins is fine with his 500 hats. This was a decision made by the Seuss estate. It is a private business. It was not a government agency. It was not an elective official. It was people who own the rights to the book to just pull these from being published again. They're not pulling them from circulation. You're not talking about burning books. You're not talking about throwing away or confiscating anything. They're just saying, we're not going to publish these anymore. And that's because rather than alter the images in the book, we're just going to set those aside because now we realize that some of these images are kind of incendiary and they kind of are, hate to tell you. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Voyagers, which is in theaters on April 9th.
We are all alone.
It's the blue.
They're drugging us.
What does it feel like to feel something?
Increased pleasure.
Cares about the rules. We can do what we want.
Why have they all gone crazy?
Maybe this is our true nature.
That's a profound thought.
Jury's out on this one for me. I don't know much of a plot aside from it's a bunch of young, attractive people on a spaceship getting it on. It looks like it's going to be one of those things where they're trying to draw people in with the big party atmosphere of what people are doing, but there's some sort of sinister force behind it. I hope that there's something more interesting in here than just what's on the surface. The next one I want to talk about is Without Remorse on Prime on April 30th.
You took everything from me.
These were foreign attacks on U.S. soil.
We have to respond.
I'm gonna make it right.
There's something inside of me that I can't turn off. Part of me that won't stop for anything. No remorse.
I'm interested in this one simply because it looks like it might be a nice, exciting movie to do. I'm not a huge fan of Michael B. Jordan. I think he carries too much darkness and broodiness to him to make him an effective hero, but it might work in this situation since he is sort of in that track for revenge. I've not read enough Tom Clancy to even be aware of this character, so we'll see on both of these when it comes to April. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Boogie and Lucky.
Girl, try to be with you.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Boogie. A Chinese-American basketball player hopes for a college scholarship while he struggles to deal with his dysfunctional family.
No one believes in an Asian basketball player. It's a joke in this country. We can cook, clean, count real good, but anything else, we pick last. But if you stick to our plans and we beat Monk, we get our shot at the NBA. Yeah, I don't cry no more. You don't want to know what's going on in my house. My mom, she's responsible, but she doesn't believe in me. Have mercy on me. My dad is irresponsible, but he believes in me.
I got 5,000 years of Chinese history. It's a lot of pressure. A
couple weeks ago, I think it was last week or two ago, I was talking about the movie Minari, which is the Korean-American film that is up for a bunch of awards. It got some at the Golden Globes. I think it got Best Foreign Language Film, even though it's been controversial about whether that's in a foreign language or not, since it's kind of half and half Korean and English. But I said when I talked about that movie that there's been a slate of films lately that serve the purpose of inclusion, really. They do not necessarily tell a new, fresh story. Minari was about an American family farming. It just happened to be Korean people who were growing Korean vegetables. And then they were dealing with the Korean baggage from the old country, just as the Godfather films deal with the Italian baggage from the old country, for example. Now, Boogie is done by the guy who put together Fresh Off the Boat, which is a sitcom. This is not a comedy. This is just a basic basketball movie. It's the story we've seen a dozen times before about the guy in high school who's really good at basketball, and he sees that as his way out of the hood, or his way out of poverty, or just out of the situation he's in right now with his parents. The big difference is usually a movie like that deals with an African-American perspective because, you know, in America, the focus of basketball, while there's a lot of people of many different ethnicities that play basketball, it's a huge focus in the African-American communities. So that's the big difference, is instead of this guy being a black kid, he is a Chinese kid. And that's really all it is. I mean, it's his relationship with his family. It's him getting a girlfriend in school and dealing with her, dealing with his friends at school, dealing with the college recruiters and wanting to get a scholarship but not being able to pay for higher education, and being on that team and proving himself. It's a basketball movie. It's something we've seen a dozen times before, but it's told from the Chinese American's perspective. And that's cool. I mean, I'm all for it. I'm not a big fan of this kind of movie. I don't care about basketball. I am not somebody who watches the sport at all. But it is an interesting perspective. It's a perspective that most people haven't seen. And what you're seeing now is you're seeing representation does indeed matter. I mean, it helps to have movies about a diverse cast and about diverse characters, because in America, we are a diverse country. I don't know if this is going to connect to people who aren't Chinese Americans. I mean, I didn't play basketball. I don't care about basketball. I'm not Chinese. So there's not a lot for me to connect to with this movie. But I'm not going to get in the way of somebody else connecting with it. I mean, it certainly leans on a lot of the American experience of an immigrant family dealing with, once again, the baggage that they have from the old country and the baggage that the country pushes on them. There's a scene, I think they actually say it in the trailer. People think of us as being good at cooking and cleaning and good at math, but nobody thinks of us as basketball players. And you look, anybody can play basketball if you practice and know what you're doing. And so it's, you know, it's an inclusive movie, and I think that that's fine. I think we need more of that. And if it doesn't include you and you're not interested, don't go see the movie. But at least for people out there who want to, you know, see a familiar-looking face on screen, I think that's a good thing. I mean, that's ultimately what this guy's trying to do with Fresh Off the Boat on television. But he's also trying to spread that to movies as well. And this movie I didn't particularly like. I was kind of bored with it. I didn't like the characters. I thought they were all a bunch of jerks. So I'm going to say it kind of sucks, But don't let that take away from the fact that if it's your kind of movie, you might really like it.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Lucky. A couple deal with a time loop in which a man tries to break into their house every night to kill them.
Ted! I saw someone outside.
Honey, that's the man.
He comes every night and tries to kill us.
We're just gonna leave him?
Oh, I'm sure he's already gone.
You said a man comes into our house
every night and tries to kill us. Hey, pull it together.
What? He keeps coming back. He should be dead.
This is streaming exclusively on Shudder. If you don't remember, Shudder is it's a horror service or a thriller service. It does genre work. They do like a Creepshow TV series, which, by the way, Shudder is going to be doing a halfway to Halloween month in April, where they're going to treat April as sort of like their version of Christmas in July. Because it's 6 months from Halloween. And I love Halloween, so I'll probably be leaning a little bit into that. They're going to be releasing new episodes of Joe Bob's Drive-In, and they're going to be releasing new episodes of Creepshow and a bunch of other movies that are unique to the service. So this is a great little thing to have if you like horror movies and you like to see a lot of new horror films that are not necessarily getting the wide theatrical release. A lot of these tend to be smaller ones, more intimate ones, smaller budget, smaller casts, but they give the opportunity for directors to be a little more creative. Now, Bree Grant, who I talked about with 12-Hour Shift several months ago, she wrote this and she also stars in it. And she's done her hand at directing because she directed 12-Hour Shift. And she directed Best Friends Forever, which was this apocalyptic movie. And she plays the main character who is facing off against this guy in the time loop. Now, this is not your typical time loop movie. It's not a comedy. It's not meant to be goofy like, you know, something like Palm Springs or obviously the most famous one being Groundhog Day. But what I appreciated about it is it wasn't going into cliche necessary with a time loop movie. It does go into different realms. It gets a little bit muddled as we really get farther and farther down the path and to figure out whether it's time that's looping or whether it's something else. I mean, it does get a little bit, like I said, it gets a little bit hard to follow and muddled at certain times because it's certainly trying to stretch outside of the box. It's not rock solidly written, so it gets a little bit murky, especially near the end. But overall, I appreciate it. I have respect for what it is. I'm not a huge fan of Bree Grant's writing and directing necessarily, but I respect her as a filmmaker, especially somebody who made a name for herself in front of the camera and then really wants to get some traction behind the camera and is doing some innovative stuff. Even if it doesn't click with me necessarily, what Bree Grant is doing is commendable, and I think that that's great. So if you're a fan of these kind of movies and you want to check it out on Shudder, it's playing this weekend. You can see it, and I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Raya and the Last Dragon and Chaos Walking. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the new Disney movie that's out this week. And that is Raya and the Last Dragon. A young woman goes on a quest to find the last dragon in the land to save her village from a mysterious dark force.
My name is Raya. Our lands have been at war for as long as we can remember. Our people never see eye to eye.
My daughter, I believe our people can come together again, but someone has to take the first step.
Now, in order to restore peace, we must find the last dragon.
I wish to join this fellowship of butt-kickery.
Ta-da!
Let's go. We'll have to watch our backs.
This is premiering in theaters and on the Disney Plus service, but it's that Disney Premier Access. It's the same thing they did with Mulan, the live action remake. That means that you're paying $30 or $29.99 to watch this movie. And I believe you buy it for $30 and you get to keep it on the service. Now, keep in mind, in about 6 months, it's going to show up on the service on its own. It'll go when it kind of hits, when it would hit DVD and Blu-ray. That's about when it's going to show up, you know, 3, 4, 5 months, 6 months from now. Now, before I even talk about the movie, just talk about that pay structure. If you're a single person living alone, that's kind of steep. You know, if you're just one person who's curious about Disney movies, $30 is a lot to spend on it. But if you had a family of five that you're going to take to the theater to see this, you're going to spend at least $30 just to walk in the door. It is actually a pretty good deal if you got multiple people interested in seeing this movie. But this is only the second release they've done like this, so they're still testing the waters, and we'll see if this number pricing works when Black Widow comes out, because I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up doing some sort of platformed release as well. Anyways, when it comes to the movie itself, this one, although it's animated, it's not live action, computer-generating animation, by Disney Animation Studios, the arm of the Mouse House that does stuff like Frozen and Zootopia, and they did Tangled. That's different than the Pixar wing that does Toy Story, and they did Soul. So Disney owns two major animation studios, and this is the Disney Animation Studio. And you can see that in the character design, because the character design looks, I mean, it's an Asian character, but she has that same sort of body type that you have for Rapunzel from Tangled or Elsa from Frozen. This is a very high concept movie. It doesn't take place in China. It's sort of this Chinese version of Middle Earth is the best way I can describe it, where it's this feudal land where people still use swords and knives, and it's somewhat of an agrarian society. And there were dragons, and the dragons helped defeat these dark spirits that roam the land, but the dark spirits are coming back, and this girl has to go find this jewel that has to be put together so it can summon a dragon, and then the dragon can help save the land. But ultimately, it's your standard Disney film, which involves going on a quest, and then it involves friendship, because, of course, the woman, or the character, she's played by Kelly Marie Tran from Star Wars, she befriends a dragon, and the dragon's played by Awkwafina, the voice, and they have other people in a very typical Disney fashion. She sort of puts together this oddball misfit rogue gallery of her team, which is kind of cute. And I gotta say, first of all, the animation is gorgeous. It's fantastic. And it's one of those that you can really see it growing by leaps and bounds from Tangled to Frozen to this now. I mean, this stuff is impressive animation and beautifully done. It's got a great story. It's sort of one of those movies that's steeped in a Chinese cultural appearance, but it has very universal themes about friendship and family and doing the right thing and trusting people and peace versus war. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that it goes beyond the ethnicity of the movie, and that's what makes Disney movies work, is they tend to transcend the trappings of whatever the story is. So it's beautifully done. It's got a lot of great action sequences to it. It's got some really funny moments and has some really heartfelt moments. But it's still a good, solid adventure movie. And it's something that I think the whole family can enjoy. I watch it with my family. And my wife and I loved it. And our kids, my kids are 12, 17, and 19. So, you know, they're getting up there in age, but they still enjoyed it. So this is not something that's just for little kids or anything. It's a fantastic movie. And, you know, I hope it's going to be remembered as one of the great Disney animated CGI movies that they've done in their new studios, going up there along with something like Frozen, although it doesn't have music and everything. You don't have to endure people singing Let It Go for the next 5 years. So I'm going to have to say that Raya and the Last Dragon is absolutely worth checking out, and I'd say it's worth the $30 price tag. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Chaos Walking. A woman's spacecraft crashes on a planet where all the men's inner thoughts are projected for everyone to hear.
That was a terrible crash. We're lucky to be alive.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Stop! Don't come any closer.
It's a girl.
Girl! Oh my gosh, girl.
I'm sorry.
No movies.
Blonde hair. I've just never seen a girl before.
It's so loud here.
We call it a noise. Happened to all the men on this planet. Every thought in our heads were on display.
Where are all the women?
They're dead.
This is the last vestige of the teen novel dystopian adaptations that have been coming to movies. Oh, gosh. I wouldn't say since Harry Potter, but definitely since The Hunger Games. I mean, Harry Potter sort of popularized the mega-budget franchise of those young adult book series. And then, of course, you had Twilight, and then you had The Hunger Games. And for a long time, they've struggled to try to get something that are that big. It's directed by Doug Liman, who's usually really good with science fiction. I mean, Edge of Tomorrow, which is that live, die, repeat movie with Tom Cruise, is a fantastic movie. This one's not. It has the presence of story that The Maze Runner did, where it just barely holds together. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that doesn't make sense, and there's parts of it that it could get really, really dark with some of the things that are implied in this movie, but they swerve away from it because, you know, it's ultimately a young adult series and not meant to be looking at the darkest parts of the human mind. But that's the whole point, is it's these men who have these thoughts that are in front of their heads, and they don't particularly like women because the women don't have those thoughts. Well, first of all, the last thing, can we agree that the last thing we need is our thoughts as men projected for the world to see? You think you're alone now because of the pandemic and you're staying at home? You would stay at home all the time. In fact, the only place you'd be safe would be a strip club because they already know what you're thinking. Anyways, Chaos Walking, it's got a great cast, and that's what's so sad about it. I mean, Daisy Ridley plays the woman, and she's really not given much to do in terms of emotion or character development. Tom Holland is the main character. He's the guy who finds her and tries to keep her safe. And while he has the most richly developed character, he's still sort of two-dimensional. And Mads Mikkelsen plays the bad guy, and he is always great in everything he does. It's just he's sort of floundering out there alone, doing some great Mads Mikkelsen stuff, but not actually, getting any traction through the rest of the movie. It's chaos me after I've had a couple too many drinks on a cruise ship, and I'm lucky to make it back to the bed. Nice idea, some cool concepts, but it just never gets off the ground enough, and it's needlessly convoluting. And that's one of the problems with these young adult adaptations. They sometimes, they're just complexly written for no other reason than to be complexly written. And I'm not saying it's hard to decode, because look, I'm not stupid. But it's just, it's sort of like being led in a winding path and going, I'm not exhausted from walking this winding path, but it just seems unnecessary. And that's really my take on Chaos Walking. It kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Coming to America and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Rick and Morty seasons 1-4 on Blu-ray. At the movies, we have one final movie review to do, and that is Coming to America number 2. After ascending to the king's throne, Akeem returns to America to find his illegitimate son, who will one day rule Zamunda.
Hey, what are you doing back here, Mufasa?
I've just discovered that I may have a son here in this land.
How much child support is she getting from?
The king pays no child support.
No child support for 30 years, and you came back. You's a dummy!
Hello,
I am Akeem Jaffa, King of Zamunda. You are the heir to the throne.
Yes, my father.
I always thought that Mika was going to be queen.
Did it ever occur to you that Mika wanted to be your heir?
This was originally supposed to come out in theaters, I think, in 2020, and it got bumped by the pandemic, and then it was supposed to come out earlier, like the beginning of January, and then it got bumped again, and now it's finally coming out on Amazon Prime this weekend. And as much as I like the people involved, I like Arsenio Hall, I like Eddie Murphy, in spite of some of the crap he's done in the past. I like Craig Brewer as a director, but this movie feels exactly like what it is. It's a movie that was made 30 years later than it probably should have been made. Look, I'm not even saying that Coming to America was screaming for a sequel at all. I think it feels forced. But put that 30 years between it and you do question whether you need it. I know it's popular to make sequels of older movies. And there was actually a quote floating around there that Eddie Murphy says is he thinks it's the longest time from a sequel. I had somebody look that up for me. Actually, I think the longest one is, at least in recent years, has been Mary Poppins Returns. Yeah, you know, it was like 60 some years later. And then, of course, I think Blade Runner has another, is longer, because that came out in 1982 and the sequel came out like 35 years later. This is 32 years after the original movie. And it just feels like that. I mean, they try, and there's some good moments to it. Don't get me wrong. There are some funny things. There are some jokes that land and can be quite humorous. The best parts of it actually are when they're in America. When they're in Zamunda, Zamunda's kind of... Zamunda only works when you talk about it, because when you watch it, you're like, well, this is still a royal hierarchy, and there's got to be vast poverty and death squads and military coups and all the other horrible things that we know about African governments that are saddled with the curse of having resources that then go into the hands of oligarchs and military captains. You know all that's kind of behind the scenes, but they struggle to kind of, oh, no, they're just rich and wealthy, but they're nice kings and queens. It's when you're spending too much time in Zamunda, it's hard to not think about that stuff. So the funniest parts are when they return to Queens, which is about 30% of the movie. I mean, of course, going back to the barbershop is a lot of fun. It's nice to see Arsenio and Eddie do these characters again that we saw 30. The characters don't get any older, although they did. I mean, like Eddie Murphy, I think, is about the same age that James Earl Jones was when he did the first movie. But it's nice to see everybody back and kind of falling into the roles. It really relies a lot on nostalgia. And I think Craig Brewer balances it the best he can. There's a lot of also, like, dance numbers for some strange reason. Like, everybody's got an introductory dance. It's sort of like watching a wrestling match where everybody has a theme song when they come in. And that gets a little bit tired. But there are some very funny moments. Actually, even, like, Leslie Jones, who plays the kid's mom, she's actually pretty good. I normally am not a big fan of hers, but I think she's funny in this movie, as is Tracy Morgan, who plays her brother, I think. But the kid who plays Akeem's son, he's kind of forgettable. I know he's like a up-and-coming star, but I found him kind of boring. You know, overall, it's kind of like what I felt about that Aladdin movie that they made with Will Smith, where I'm like, all it did was make me want to watch the first one. But, I mean, look, it's Coming to America. It's on Amazon Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, it's worth the 2 hours to watch it. I just wouldn't pay any money to see it beyond your Amazon account subscription, if that makes sense. I mean, that sounds really dismissive. And it calls them like I sees them. So I'm going to have to say that I'm going to still give it a nice grade. I'm going to say Coming to America kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is on Rick and Morty seasons 1-4. The smartest man in the universe drags his grandson along with him on highly inappropriate adventures across time and space.
Rick, we did it! We got it!
Hurry up, Morty, get in!
Chachi!
Fuck Chachi, Morty.
I'm not rated to climb something this sheer.
Look, you're the guy that wanted an epic adventure. I'm the guy with only one hover chair. And that's the end of the Morty Gets a Dragon experiment.
Are you gonna slay it?
First off, I always slay it, queen. Secondly, yes, let that salve sit for 10 minutes or you'll die. Don't let it sit for 12 or I'll have to hunt down what you become. Oh! You know what? You're right. I could get used to this magic stuff.
I had never watched Rick and Morty until I watched Solar Opposites on Hulu. And I love Solar Opposites. I think that's a hoot of a show. Rick and Morty, I came in after that. I started watching season one whenever Solar Opposites season one came out. And I got about halfway through it. And it's fun. It's a little bit deliberately obnoxious at times that it does kind of bother me, but it is funny. What I like about Rick and Morty is the out there nature of it, the complete bonkers world and universe that they live in. They will go places that are really far out of the box, and I don't know, maybe it's because they're on drugs. I like to look at Rick and Morty as Phineas and Ferb growing up with meth addictions because it thinks out of the box, and it also plays with some interesting scientific concepts. I mean, you can tell that the people developing this show have a love for at least pop science facts. You know, stuff like they make jokes about Schrodinger's cat. They're talking about wormholes and the annoyance with time travel movies. And there's a certain amount of deconstruction it does for pop culture, but not at the level of Family Guy. It is just these bizarre adventures. And they're humorous. I got to say, they're very funny. What's funny about this is, like I said, I started watching it on Hulu. And then I got away from watching it, and then I got the Blu-ray set, and I remember I talked about last week, I had fallen at my mother's house and broke a rib. So I've been kind of, you know, convalescing over the last couple of weeks. And one of the things I had was my doctor gave me Vicodin, so the pain would be away enough that I could sleep. So it was really interesting, and I was like, I gotta go watch Rick and Morty and take Vicodin, because it's my job. You know, I mean, I felt like that was sort of bragging rights. But fortunately, I gotta say, you don't need Vicodin to enjoy Rick and Morty. But it's a funny show if you're okay with raunchy animated humor. And I am. And it's neat to see something that is in that adult animation realm that's not Family Guy or American Dad or The Cleveland Show or any of the other things that Seth MacFarlane does. Not to say that Seth MacFarlane's a hack, but I want to see more than just what he does. And that's what makes Rick and Morty good, in my opinion. So I did enjoy this, and I got into it. I did not get why everyone liked the Pickle Rick episode, because I got to it and I'm like, okay, that was an episode. But I did realize, though, and I said this to a radio friend of mine. I said, I'm going to sound like I'm a real jerk here. I like Rick and Morty as a show. Not a big fan of the fans of Rick and Morty. Nothing, I mean, look, if you like Rick and Morty, that's great. But when Pickle Rick showed up in the Twitterverse, I couldn't stand anyone who was tweeting about him. I didn't care whether you were a professor or a porn star. Any tweet about Pickle Rick was really annoying. And what's interesting is that carries over into the special features. As fun as the show is, and the special features have like commentaries and animatics for a lot of their episodes, but they have some behind the scenes featurettes. And like, I couldn't get through them. They were so annoying. They had the people who made the show interviewing each other, but they were doing it in that sort of and ah awkward approach that they do in the show. And it works when it's animated, but boy, when it's just some guy with a camcorder, oh, it looks like some crappy college student's putting this together. I seriously, it was like a 10 or 15 minute segment. I could not get through the whole thing. So don't watch this behind the scenes stuff. Watch the show. The show's funny. For high concept, weirdo, bizarro sci-fi, Rick and Morty can be a lot of fun. I laughed a lot, unfortunately, and I'm sort of ashamed at times. But no, I'm not. I have no shame. Anyways, Rick and Morty rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available on home cinema this week include the releases of Monster Hunter, Fatale, Half-Brothers, and All My Life, along with Doctor Who, The Revolution of the Daleks, the winter episode that just aired a couple months ago. And that's it for the show. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Come True, Stay Out of the Attic, and Long Weekend. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.